sure
he,
didn't.
Well, he was delivering milk, so he could probably have been there.
Well, let's see. Well, Bob George is saying that, that when he had his heart attack, he wasn't supposed to have any visitors for 3 days, but Ron was delivering milk to the hospital. And so he'd come around and come in the back entrance and go up and see how Bob was.
Well, also, he brought the book in.
Brought what book in?
The farm book? And said, what do I do? Remember bringing the book into Bob's room the next morning after his heart attack? And asking him what he was supposed to, what you were supposed to do to keep going.
I remember what I told him, but I shouldn't have told him. Told Dad Maury Hawley come and spray corn for weeds. And it worked, well, it worked fair for weeds, but the next year we put oats on there. A new variety of oats, you know. You remember that now?
And then what happened?
Out here? He had a damn old outfit that he sprayed with, you know. Down on the flat, it worked fine, but when you get going up the hill, these sprayers, it didn't take much pressure to spray, but he would, his tractor would start to miss, and he'd slow way down, so he'd put on about four times as much material as he ought to have. The next year, the oats come up pretty good, but it didn't take long till they just disappeared. There was so much carryover in the land, it just killed them, burned them right up.
The poison.
Oh. Well, it was a growth inhibitor, really, is what it was. It grew the plant to death, is what that spray was at that time. But, and if you put on the right amount, it would kill the weeds, not the plant. But if you put on too much, well, the plant would take it up and it would make the plant grow itself a bit too. It wouldn't have been bad, only that it was a special new variety of oats. And those things, when they first come out, they made pretty good money, but they didn't make much off of that.
Rotary dinner and fed everybody out by the garage. And we had a field of corn. We had a test field. Just east of the garage, I think it's the garage. And,
it was Wisconsin Yield Trials Day.
Wisconsin Yield Trial. And
the Farm Progress.
This was a different day than Yield Trials.
Yield Trials. See, we had Wisconsin Experiment Trials, and we had Holder Blacks. You know, we did trial fields for Blacks for 2, 3, 4 years. I don't know if they ever did for Holder or not. But I'm
trying to think what happened there. Anyway, these strips of test strips have been harvested. Pile of corn up in front of them, and the weight of the corn, and the yield per acre. And I
remember what you're talking about, but you had that a year or two before I came here.
Salesman for Pioneer and so forth. They used the information that I furnished them.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a year or two ahead of me. I remember you telling them about it, and
I decided I'd never again release any information on
your high risk.
Yeah. I remember when we bought the old big brown corn crib up at Charmony Farm, don't you? Had they moved down here?
That was something.
Yeah. I went by the Charmony Farms here a couple weeks ago and I said, oh, gee, we moved a great big old Ron corn crib from there down here.
It's still on there, I think. Maybe so.
Yeah, I think it's gone, ain't it, Jackie? The old Ron corn crib? I think to me they...
Was it a metal one?
Metal one. I think that's gone.
It was down on the dairy, but it may be gone now.
I think it's gone now. I think a year or two ago, it seemed to me, I saw that tipped over and they demolished that, I think. Yeah, that was quite a deal. Oh, I think Ruby Herman from Lake Mills moved that down for us. I think that was the guy's name. And Rudy Herman. And you and I went up, well, we threw the writer, Ruben or somebody, we knew that they told us it was going to be for sale. And we went up there and looked at it, and then we come back to find somebody to move it for us. And I think it was old Rudy Herman. I think he moved that down there for us.
Nels Hogan? Yeah. Or Hoggy? Yeah, it's
Hoggy.
Hoggy, yeah.
Nils.
N-I-L-S. That was here.
Scandinavian boy?
Yeah. Yes. From Norway. Yeah. He brought a girl over and she got they got married. Well, after they went back, she became a doctor and they were separated. When we went to Norway, we went to see him. Or he met us at the motel. I had written to him, and he took us all around his farm, and...
He's a big shot.
Yes.
He's... When we were there, he had 263 employees on him. He was running a co-op, grain co-op. Mm-hmm.
He was a real nice
American Scandinavian Foundation. He had employees for men.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, many of them. I see you were working with that before I came here. Through Gilbert, I guess you got started.
There was one that was here just before Gilbert. We got it all written down.
Yeah.
Well, and then Gilbert came. He came on his own. But this guy was from Denmark. Nils
Hagen.
Nils Hagen.
Yeah, he was the one that was here when we were here. And when I had my surgery, got out of the hospital.
Now, if it's one that come before Gilbert,
Nils Hagen was
There's a Nils Hauge, and then a Nils Hagen.
Was he the Swede?
No, he was from Denmark.
I can settle it in a moment.
Okay, and he wouldn't eat sweet farming. Because it got in his teeth, and also they thought he thought it was animal food for animals.
You wouldn't eat what?
Sweet corn. We just love corn on the cob, and he would not eat that corn on the cob because it got in his teeth, and he thought it was not food. And then one of the boys maybe got that in their teeth. Was about 6'7", and he was a Danish boy. I don't remember which one of his name was.
Sven was shorter.
This was a boy from Denmark that was so tall. Yeah.
These are the names of the other Scandinavians who work on the Dogen farm. The first one was Jens Christensen. Jens Christensen came just before Gilbert.
We didn't own him.
Olaf Brenn?
No.
Gulbrand and Silvig Gestvang, Jürgen Gestvang, Nielsen Hagen.
Yeah.
Ole Hansen.
That's when you're talking.
Yeah.
Nils Hauge, Niels Hellis, Jacob Hemmingsen.
Jacob
Karsten Hay, Bent Iverson, Sven Johansson, Sven Ivar Jevny, Kitter Junlund, Ilmar Collins, Carl Knutsen, Sven Knutsen, Knud Nielsen, Mats Norell, Soren Oden, Håkon Olsen, Lars Pettersen, Nils Langri, Arne Sartre, Per Sauge, Gustav Schroll, Sven Dage Sorensen, Egil Svenevig, he still lives here in town.
Yeah, he married a local girl.
Jens Toft and Terge Vanum.
You had a Korean boy, too.
Sure, he was in there.
The Korean wasn't here. I've got him up here, I think. From almost the start, there have been workers from other countries employed on the farm. Peter Snell in 1917 comes from Holland. Also about that time are Robert and Irma Alder from Switzerland, then Irma's sister Elsie. Okay, now Evie is saying that the Korean, who would be Byung Sang Oh, didn't like the food.
He didn't like the food, and I knew that Anderson, what is her name?
Pat Anderson.
Yeah. Made delicious food because she had all the milk and cream and eggs, and everybody else really liked her food. But I kind of wondered if it was because maybe she didn't serve enough rice. And he put his clothes under the mattress. Nels Haugie, I think, told me this. That the Korean put his clothes under the mattress to iron them. And he gave me a vase, a little vase, and he sent it through the mail. He didn't hand it to me. He sent it through the mail. It was metal with pearl on the outside. It was really pretty. That was one of
them. I don't remember all those names, but I do when you read them.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jens Christensen was here just before Gilbert got here.
I didn't know. Mm-hmm.
And then Gilbert came, and then after...
Gilbert didn't come through on a basement.
No, Gilbert got impatient. let's see where it puts. Gilbert Gjestvang, a Norwegian, applies to the American Scandinavian trainee program before it's even in place. He's told to wait, but he's impatient and goes through the American Embassy in Oslo, which gives him the name of a county agent in Madison, Wisconsin. The agent finds him a position on a small farm near Stoughton, south of Madison, and in 1949, Gilbrand comes over on a year's farm trainee visa. He keeps a diary of his experiences and learnings and adds in drawings to augment his text. On his first page, he draws his ocean liner, and on the second, the Statue of Liberty. After a short while, he finds the scope of the Stoughton farm too small, and the county agent suggests Ronald the Dogan farm at Beloit. He writes, and Ron Dogan says, come. Gulbrand's name is Americanized to Gilbert. He's lodged at the big house, where Olive and Irv Fonda are in charge. There are three other hired men living there, including the Danish Jens Christensen, known to the rest as Jim. Gilbert writes in Norwegian in his diary for his first day of work, August 22. I worked in the round barn. It is built around the silo in a circle. It's the first round barn I've ever seen. It is a nice building, easy to work in, with feeding in the middle and the cows standing around with their heads toward the center. It is still too early to judge the advantages and disadvantages of this way of building a barn.
What year is this?
1949.
And because he left 1949. The year he came, 56. Yeah, he was here once and worked for you, and then he went back, and then he came back.
And he was farm manager.
He managed for you, didn't he?
Yeah.
He wrote from Norway, saying that.
He said of good character.
So I told him that you've got to be a better judge of her character than I can be. Who was the girl then?
Solveig.
Solveig. And he was all set to take over the farm. Solveig wanted to go home. Wanted to go back to
Norway.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they were living over the milk house.
Oh, yes, I suppose. That would be
noisy. Because they started work pretty early there, didn't they, in the milk house? Yeah. 4:30 in the morning, and they start over there.
So, I don't blame her for leaving. Some story about it being naturalized. Gilbert was within a few weeks or something.
Well, we didn't see Gilbert because we didn't know him.
But I
wrote to Nels and he met us and we spent a whole day with him. And that was really nice. One of the things he said, "Can you walk, Evelyn?" And I said, "Well, sure." And he said, "Well, then we'll walk to the train station." I didn't realize that it was going to be all the way across Oslo.
Now wait, is this Nels Hauge?
He traveled by train.
Hauge.
He was in Fredericksburg, was that the name of his hometown?
I think so.
And then he commuted every day by train, electric trains. And then his office was, I suppose, a mile and a half from the station. But over there, everybody had a briefcase. Everybody was carrying a briefcase. Everyone saw them carrying a briefcase. Nice boy. Well, we had a lot of nice boys. Those were nice boys.
Do you still keep in touch with some of them?
Man, not much anymore. Miss Nels, we did. Karsten High was a very good friend. We really thought Larry Carson was a very nice boy. He was a good worker.
Larry went over there then. We went through the exchange office in New York there, and he went over to Norway and Denmark and Sweden. And when he was in Norway, it was with Carson.
No. Arnie
Sartre?
Sartre.
Oh, Arnie Sartre.
Was he a tall guy?
Yep, mm-hmm. Big tall
one. He showed up the day before Farm Progress Days started.
Oh, he did?
He went from here to California for 6 months. And then when he left here, he and Larry got to be pretty good buddies. So he told Larry, he said, "Well, when I get ready to come back, I'm going to come back too, and then you go on with me back to Norway, and I'll find you." So Larry went back. And he was over there for a year and a half. He was in Norway, I don't know, 6 or 8 months. And then he went to Denmark for a while. And then he went to Sweden. And he worked, just what all he did. But it was the same type of program, exchange program.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't far from probably recently. 1961. You were here?
Well, I remember standing out here showing this tall Norwegian who just arrived. And looking down on these fields to see progress and stuff.
Yep. We had 5 or 6 inches of rain about 3 days before the progress days. An absolute nightmare.
And also
I really didn't want it here at that time. It was right during seed corn harvest, 6th, 7th, and 8th of October. I had to shut down the seed corn operation for Farm Progress Days. Roy was just eating up the publicity of the whole thing. You know what I mean? He loved that. He was chairman of the township for me and put a lot of effort into getting that thing here. It was a nice exposition. But
the raccoons got in and ate some corn, I remember.
That was a plot. Had the plot down the inside hill, you know, about a week before the thing, the raccoons got in.
We fixed up some kind of popping.
Yeah, they had those gas guns.
Guns or something.
Gas guns? But with
they're like a cannon. They're a propane gas thing. And I don't know just exactly how they work. They must have electric igniter in them. And ever so often, the gas, they got a little bit of trickle gas. And ever so often, the gas will build up enough so that then that igniter will come on and then it explode. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, they got a lot of them. The DNR, they furnish them to people for wheat fields and corn fields. Well, they didn't stop.
So it scares the animals away.
No. Didn't stop it. Well, the damn thing had done the damage, and it just stopped it.
Well, I remember we had the big exhibit out here in front.
Yeah,
cows. before they sent
Weren't they those white Charlotte cars or whatever they are, the French?
Charlie?
Maybe. I've got that written down too.
No, when was that? That was some fall. That wasn't far in progress days.
I think it was. It was in the Fire and Fargus days newspaper stuff.
Yeah, this plane was here. I don't remember. That was a nightmare for me, because see, Langs, after we got the rain, then they wouldn't let them come on their place. And so we had to have everything here. Then all of a sudden they were just crazy, because they needed to have, Langs were going to have plowing over there, they were going to have corn picking over there, but they all of a sudden rained down, decided they couldn't come over there, it was too wet. So we had to have everything here. So we put a plowing back here on the hillside, back in there, we had the plows back in there. I don't remember what corn, God, it was a headache, it was just...
I remember, now they're talking about that hill, driving the tractor on that hill back someplace, and it was kind of steep, and then he told me to go up and down, straight up and down, so that I wouldn't have to worry about going side on the side hill, because I didn't think that I wanted to tip over.
Mm-hmm. You were driving the tractor.
Mm-hmm. I drove tractor and truck once in a while. I don't know how come I was driving tractor, but I did. I helped him get the field ready for something, I suppose.
Can't remember all the details, but I know that it turned out to be just a headache because that rain went on, and all of a sudden they would let them over there. That really threw a screw in the works. We needed the land we had on both places. That's originally, that's what we had to do in order to have it, was have this amount of land available to do the things they wanted to do. And then when rain down all decided they couldn't come over there, well then that really threw a curve at us, because all of a sudden we had all these people with their equipment and stuff wanted to display it, and they had that, and the state was, well, the whole object of the show was to do that, and then all of a sudden he says he can't come over there.
So. Hmm. Where are you here in the way now?
No, we're just in Urban Olive and Bob and Elmer. Oh, Olive, of course, has got this bad situation, you know, with her throat. And now Bob, you know, he's got a bad...
Talking about making butter, and we've been talking about butter crocks and $50 that Nancy paid for one, and Joanne bidding one up, and now Dad's saying something about putting butter out on the route.
Well, I put out the first butter, and we'll get some cow returns on that. People bitter, rancid, so. But I learned then that I had to. Madison talked about it, hopefully somebody up there, that you had to pasteurize the cream before you made butter out. That synergy.
Yes, I remember getting butter in those, but we must have had to return them, right? When we used them, we returned them to you so that you could reuse them.
Crocs?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Crocs came back.
Sure. Just like bottles.
Yeah. Came back like bottles.
Like bottles. That's right. Yeah, they come back just like bottles. All that stuff in those days is returnable. See, nowadays you throw it. But you can't. You have too much problem trying to sterilize them and clean them. In those days, everything was returned. The bottles were returned, the crocs were returned.
What was the name of the guy that, wash can and so forth.
Sparky. Ralph, or Adams. Sparky Adams. What was his name?
Sparky Adams.
Was it Ralph?
No, I've got it in my list. Do you want to find
Sparky.
Out?
Sparky. No. Well, Sparky was the one that would wash milk cans.
And he came up to the office one day and he sat down on a chair between your desk and mine. And he'd had a problem. He'd had a stroke or something. And he was trying to tell a story, and he was so, I get so mad at myself, he'd say, I can't remember.
Sparky.
Yeah. I don't think he worked much after that.
He But he didn't have anybody, any family, did he?
He wasn't a very good can washer either.
No, he was Sparky wasn't very bright.
Bill Russell.
Yeah, Bill Russell.
Yeah.
He had diabetes so bad.
Well, who was the guy at the dog house?
George?
George Schreiber.
George Schreiber?
Yeah. Well, he was a great guy with his cats.
He was also a great guy for his booze, wasn't he?
Well...
after he'd get done the afternoon, he'd go down and...
I think we misjudged him. He drank considerable, I guess. But his staggering and so forth.
Oh, no, I don't...
That was something in his...
Yeah. I don't know, George never got... he was never, what do I want to say, out of control. That I
didn't know that.
But he staggered a little bit.
Yeah.
Here's my story on George.
He was always much happier when he'd come back in the evening after he'd been downtown.
What do you say about George Schreiber?
George Schreiber is a mild, soft-spoken, stocky man. Mary told George Schreiber,
when we first came, that he was scared of the kids in school. When they, both Lynn and Larry, I guess, had something similar down with the colored boys came out of the school building and Larry, or one of them, got behind the door and they were just petrified because we came from an area that was, we had Mexicans in Jefferson, but we never had any color. So this was the first experience that they had with color. And so they told me one day that they were telling George that they were afraid. And Nancy was just the opposite. First day she came home from school, she had such a good time. And we said, oh, who are you playing with? Oh, some colored girl. And they had such a good time swinging and everything. So she had a good time with the kids.
Well, what did they tell George? What did George say?
I don't know.
Told George about it, huh?
About it. They never said anything to us.
Uh-huh.
They never said that they were afraid of going to school.
George was good kids.
But they had told George that they were really kind of upset about coming down and going to school.
George was the...
George Schreiber. Yes, I suppose they probably were over there pestering him too and talking to him when he was working, I suppose. And, I was surprised when they told me that, because they never admitted being frightened at the going to school to us. But it was one of those things. And it was just a pure accident probably that these color kids came out at that time and they just happened to be behind the door. But most of it was pleasant, I think. Bob went to Hampton. And Nancy got a horse. After the boys were gone.
Long, long ago, there was a pony named Mona, but we never, it was supposedly ours, but we never got
probably,
to ride it.
Yeah, yours. But he wanted a pony for your kids again.
Do you mean for the grandkids?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
And Bob said he wasn't going to take care of a pony. And I think the boys were taking care of it, but we never found out.
Then Nancy got a horse, and I certainly enjoyed riding Nancy's horse.
We did.
Yeah.
And then I got in trouble with that, too. Because we sold that horse. Damn thing was out there with the cattle getting fat, chasing the cattle around.
Well, she went to
she went
that year.
Over across and I said,
that summer.
No use that horse standing out there growing fat. Chasing her cows around, and somebody might as well have it and can use it. So I sold it. My wife and my daughter didn't like that very well either.
I'll bet.
It didn't bother me.
But the guy got it that had some little kids and could ride it.
Must have bothered Nancy.
Quite bigly.
Yeah, the poor thing.
He had kids.
She was in Switzerland when he did it.
She could take care of it. She didn't do anything with it.
And then I'd bring cleaning the office.
This is Evie George. She's saying that for a while she would clean the office.
And bring over cookies or cake or something for the guys to have lunch. I did that before I started working. And I didn't start working in the office until after Florence left.
Mm-hmm. So Florence's demise made space for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, that's the sort of story I can't tell and use a name.
No.
Florence, I can't tell her story and use a name.
Well, she is the one that
absconded with some.
Yeah.
I say she is the one that absconded with some money.
Jackie and I have visited her.
Oh, yeah.
Florence, what's her name?
Johnson.
Johnson.
Yeah.
They've got a nice place out in Western town now.
This is Justin had to borrow money
to pay me back something like $800. So
I didn't remember. I couldn't remember how much it was. That was unbelievable.
What?
I say that was unbelievable that she would do something like that.
Yeah. She seemed to be. She was so nice and involved in church. And everything, I mean, her lifestyle just didn't, you wouldn't think she would do something like that.
Oh.
But it was for her son that she did it, wasn't it?
I don't know what she did.
And I think, if I remember correctly, it was because she, was he going to school or something?
No, it's happened to her son.
No.
But, I didn't prosecute her. She did quit.
Yeah.
And her husband borrowed money to prosecute her back.
I understood she blamed it on having an Indian grandmother.
Indian grandmother?
That was part of the story. That I can't tell.
Dad told you, of course, about learning that the cows could reach the ground to eat. Silage thing we made in the yard out there.
What? I haven't heard that story.
Remind me.
Well, you see, we got sweet corn silage.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been feeding them.
You mean this was down from Libby's?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But I don't know, second or third year we was there, I don't know who he's talking to. And we decided to feed him there in the yard. And we were concerned that you had to have a manger, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy said, well, you don't need a manger, they eat grass in the field, they pasture, why can't you dump it right on the floor? So then we proceeded to build that enclosure, don't you remember? We built that enclosure in the yard, and then we'd haul the, had a gate on each end, and we'd haul the silage in there, and that places through the side they could reach through with their heads, and we'd just dump the silage in there. So we were fed all the while I was there.
That wasn't raised.
No, flying, tile floor. All we did was put treated posts and planks up about so high. And then we had the top one about so high just so they couldn't crawl in there. Yeah. We just dumped the silage in the middle, and then about once a day somebody go out there and throw it out the outside. Discovered that the cattle could reach the floor. Sure, I remember that.
Well, I can remember when they used to haul that silage. It was lights. We had lights all up in those trucks, and the kids, they had a ball at night, and they thought that was really great.
All those trucks would come rumbling in with the...
Were you there when we built that trench stall?
Yeah.
And when the walls fell in, that was a sad day. We were trying to, you know the story?
Yeah, the angle of repose.
Yeah.
We finally figured out.
We poured the slide floor, and then we,
That's all right. Okay, we got it going. Poured the floor.
We poured the floor, And then we made a form and poured sized slabs and set them up at right angles. And then we had to tie the top of these things some way, a cable, pegging the ground so we wouldn't fall over. And we still haven't fallen. I remember, you remember, had a couple of them fall over and smash to pieces. Then we stood down there and I was trying to put up silage and we're trying to do.
I think you got a hold of Looney and I think you got a hold of somebody up at the engineering up at Madison. He said, well, why don't you just pour them on the slope?
I think that was my idea.
And well, as I say, you got a hold of, you talked to somebody about it, up with the idea, wondered if it could be done and so forth.
Yeah, basically, these people were talking about tying them up.
Oh, yeah, those slabs. But we dropped two or three of those and busted them. Irv and I was doing the pouring, and you was working with that. Yeah. People telling us how to get the thing. Well, then somebody come up with the idea to pour them. We didn't know it could be done that way on the slope. That worked slick.
And yep, that thing made 2 or 3 days.
Oh, yeah. Didn't take long once we got going. The Looney brothers figured in that pretty strong, you know. I mean, the cement and so forth. Your cement had to be about the right consistency. Because if you'd get it too wet, then it would have a tendency to fall slide down on you. But it worked. Great. Oh, that old silage project was quite a project. And a lot of ton went through there.
Well, didn't we try to make silage by stacking it up?
Oh, we did, first. Mm-hmm. And when I first came there.
That didn't work.
Well, it worked, but you lost so much.
Yeah.
You had such a terrible exposure all the time, and so much rotting, and it was such a job to stack it. You see, we had the Wetmores stacked it for us. Well, the first 2 or 3 years that I came there, we were stacking it with an elevator. These trucks would tip up and smash the elevator, and it was a job to keep a crew all night, too, doing that. And that got to be, well, then we had Wetmore stacking a couple of years for us, and then they'd run their tractor over the edge and get stuck. Once we got that pit poured and got that platform up on top, well, then that worked.
And you could run your tractor, we ran our tractor right over them.
Oh, sure, all the time.
Packed it with the tractor.
First 6 or 8 loads, we'd work from the bottom up, but once they got enough so we could get off the platform, we put duals, don't you remember, on both the front and the back of the wheel tractor?
What are duals?
Two wheels. And then we got that little cap. That was the nicest thing for stacking, but it didn't pack as well. You had your weight spread out, so the wheels packed much better.
Were you on the farm when the first Libby's came and they put it in the round barn silo and the silo split?
No, I wasn't there when that first came. No, they were getting, when I came, they had that program already set up for Libby's.
Mm-hmm. Well, when did you come? What was your first
1956.
Year?
1956. I came May of 1956, 1st of May of 1956.
Mm-hmm. So
he stayed at the boarding house until after school was out. Then before
come
the
down?
Kids and I.
No, I, yeah, you, no, 1st of May, I think I started.
And then they fixed the house was an office when mm-hmm. we first came. And then they fixed it up for us to live there.
The little house, as we called it.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. Because the men were checking out in there. And was somebody living in the apartment? Was that an apartment up over the dairy then?
It was an apartment up over. Yeah. Well, it was an apartment up over the dairy, but there was also... didn't you have a crippled guy in the office? Art
Rashke you had for a while in the office.
He lived in a house trailer behind there.
No,
that was George
Shriver. Art Rashke lived upstairs in the little house.
Oh.
And the boys did their bookwork and stuff in downstairs.
The downstairs was the office. After we moved up to Chez New, you used the little house downstairs as an office. Mm-hmm. And then Gilbert and Solveig lived, when they came, they lived over the office.
Or lived over the dairy.
Over the dairy.
Yeah, over the dairy. Yeah, they lived over the dairy. But when we came, then he decided to redo that house over there for us. And then they put the office upstairs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that was when the office moved upstairs over the milk house.
Over the dairy, yeah. Over the dairy. And remodeled the house for us. Then in 1959, then we bought that house, old Bob Brannigan's over there, moved for I-90. Mm-hmm. And we had to move to Bin over there.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved into that in 1960.
Yeah, in 1960. And remember that house, they started moving it on a Saturday, Friday afternoon? And if we could have come up I-90, it would have taken like a half an hour,
mm-hmm.
as it was. They started in the afternoon, and we got it as far as the creek.
Railroad track.
The railroad track.
We had to coordinate the railroad, the telephone, the telegraph, and all of the
power electricity.
Company. So we got them all lined up for Monday morning. And so the mover said, well, we'll take it over as far as the track today, and Monday morning we'll have all those people that we dig across. Well, Monday morning, Friday, Saturday, it started raining. This was in December.
Mm-hmm.
Started raining, freezing rain, and then it rained, and then it rained, and that creek got about 200 feet wide. Remember that? And that house, and they couldn't move it, so that house got stood there for 3 weeks back in the railroad track. Before they, so
now wait, at the first railroad track there by where Fanny used to live?
We come across
behind the
you know where the Super 8 Motel is over here now? At the intersection?
I guess
Wicks
so.
Lumber Company?
Yeah.
Right there in the corner. Brannigan had bought it back from the state when it was condemned and moved it down there.
Oh.
And when they got to doing the construction, they discovered that it was setting right in the drainage pattern of the interchange.
Uh-huh.
He had the footings poured and it was standing above the footings and ready to be let down. And so they told him that they thought that he better move it out of there again. So then he decided he would sell it. So we bought it for $2,300.
Mm-hmm.
And hired telephone, I can't remember his name, James, he was a mover to move it for us for $700. Crossed over here, and we bought the lot from your dad, an acre and a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had to coordinate with the telephone company. See, there was telephone lines, there was telegraph lines.
Mm-hmm. Well, did you move it into town and then out?
No, we come right across the field.
From the walking road.
Right back to the railroad track, and then went west over to the crossing. Our crossing there, where we crossed back across the creek, you know where that crossing was. And that's where they set it on Friday night. And then it was 3 weeks before they got
it. So it was sitting out in the country, it wasn't holding up traffic or anything?
Oh, no, this was setting back the cornfield. They come right across the cornfield.
Well, that would have been fun to have seen.
You know, the way he had that thing mounted there. Curtains and everything were in it, you know, and those curtain strings, Irv and I, we rode along behind it, and those curtain strings would barely move, walking across those corners.
Hmm.
So he had a dolly under each corner. He had eight wheels, two tires side by side, and they sat on a big ball that sat underneath the beam of the hull. And then these four wheels on each side underneath there, they had like a tandem axle truck. But they also sat on an arm, so they could swing individually up and they walk up and down. And they would also rock on that ball on them. So the house was really hard to move. He would guarantee to move a house without cracking the plaster.
Even across fields?
But yeah.
That's incredible.
And he would have done it, well, he really didn't crack much plaster in that one, but the plaster that got cracked probably got cracked setting over across track because the ground thawed out in the meantime. It had been froze, and then those wheels sunk into the ground. Then it got twisted. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, he probably would have cracked it good because he had that thing so set on it. He had a very big framework, and then these wheels could work up and down this way, and they could rotate around this way, so it really didn't hurt. Mm-hmm.
Well, they would have brought it across the creek there in the back pasture where the cows and all of this went across.
Yeah, they had to put a whole bunch of sharp pieces of, about 6x6 pieces of timber, about 4 feet long, and they set them together just like that, and they filled that creek completely full of it. And they pulled it across that creek. The water going to the creek. Oh, it by this time I had it gone down some, but the water, the timbers were made. First he put them down the bottom, he put them lengthwise, they had them spaced apart so the water could run right through. He just, they must have been 3 feet deep, the timbers. But the top ones were just woven like that, so that when that thing would go across,
think what it would cost today.
Well, you know, in those days, $700 he charged me. The power company, one of them was 105, telephone company, and the telegraph and the railroad, I think that was about it. It didn't, the moving in itself, I don't think it was over $1,000. The power company, the telephone company, telegraph people, they had to lay, they laid all the telegraph lines down on the ground to go over the top of the roads. They got the house right straddle of a railroad track. And then the mover, he was pulling it with trucks, and he couldn't move it. So the power company was there underneath that big power line. If you didn't clear the power line by 9 feet or more, they had to be there in case they had to raise one of the lines, because if the weather was wet and stuff, there was a possibility of current changing, moving from the object to that. So they were there with three trucks, I think. And they had a big crane truck. So when they got straddled on the track for a little while, couldn't move it, and he said, we'll give you a boost. So he swung his big around crane truck on with a big winch on it, and he hooked onto them just enough to get the back wheels up over the track. And then they were...
Boy, that's a story.
Oh, yeah.
You had to avoid the incoming trains.
Well, they timed it, the train men timed it, so we had a lot of time. There really wasn't, we weren't close to any train time, but they were in contact. At that time, they used telephones. They didn't have quite so much radio, but they were in contact with the station both ways from all the time. They had one guy there that was setting on the telephone or telegraph, whatever they use, so in case there was, but we weren't close to any. There wasn't that many trains coming at that time. They timed it so that the time we were going across was, had a lot of time between friends. And they didn't get hung up on the track very long. But,
I bet you look at that house every time you go by it.
Sure
does. Yes, and now.
Oh, and the trees.
The trees are all grown up.
Oh, hey, they have grown, you know. Well, it looks like they're doing some work on it again. I when we come by, it looks like they had that.
I'll have to look when we go back.
Like you're doing some work.
I was looking at the trees and he was looking at the house.
Now let's see, your lower farm now, didn't I? Something's changed, but they're taking that all over now. That's all being developed, isn't it, the lower farm?
I don't know.
What did I saw?
I sold it 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, you sold that, the dairy and everything?
Yeah.
Oh.
I haven't had anything to do with that for a long time.
No, you sold it a long time ago, but then Bob... Ron Freetag farmed it. You had control up until a certain amount of...
Well, you sold that... I think you sold that far left to Butel, didn't you?
It was a long time ago.
Yeah, you sold that to Butel, and you sold that to them for so much an acre, and then they had interest to pay on that, and they could take it over in 40-acre increments. At their discretion, at that time, then they had to pay your original price. But in the meantime, they had to pay the interest on the land that they weren't developed.
Well, have they developed it any more than just the trailer camp?
Yeah, they put some more stuff across the track.
Oh yeah, they've got factories just, across the track, yeah.
Not long ago, I just read something about that they were, it seemed they're going to develop that behind the creek now, too. Behind the trailer house there, I'm not sure. But I know that the place across the creek, something else is one in. I mean, across the track, something else is one in over there. Besides that enzyme company, haven't they?
I don't know.
I think there's something else. When it seemed to me, I saw that, or McKilps told me, or something that they have
done.
See, that's developing back there on Brannigan's and back on yours. That's quite a lot that's gone in there.
I don't think much on mine.
Not much on yours, maybe not. I haven't been back in there. I don't know about Stanley Wallace place. Have they done
any Wallace? No, that was our, that was the, we were next to Standing Water.
Yeah, place. But is much developed on his land back in
I
there?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't know. But, I should have
Something. 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 Something.
Well, one of the things that we remember is that new, that highway, I-90, when that went through.
Yeah.
They worked on that day and night too. The lights.
Yeah.
And my folks would come and stay with us. And of course they couldn't sleep because of all that noise. Until they'd sleep, they said, Mother would say, I didn't sleep awake. Well, on the next night, she'd probably sleep. But we got so we were used to that. We didn't, it didn't even bother us.
Well, I remember driving it out of the, from here to back to I-90. Mm-hmm. When I-90 went through and watching those big earth movers swooping down on the side
22,
of the road.
24 of them.
Huh?
22, 24 of those great big old things they had in there. They were on them 22 hours a day. They shut down 2 hours a day for service. Shut the units down. The other day, Marvin Barless. Did you know, remember the Barless farms up there on the prairie?
One Barless I knew quite well.
Stu Barless and Al Barless. Stewart, who's a Jersey man. Yeah, you know, and Alf, Alf's boy, Marv, was up the other day. He sells seed corn for the company, and he was up the other day. And he was saying that this Knutson farm up here, do you remember old K.D. Knutson up on the prairie? And he, a bunch of the contractors moved that equipment in there and ahead of time, and he locked it up and sued him for. Don't you remember that?
Yeah.
You got all the blue saddles and stuff up there, but they say the boys lost the whole damn business. It's in the hands of some mortgage people now, and he's lost the whole damn...
Knutson,
yeah. He had a big dairy there, big herd of dairy cattle.
They got about 7 silos.
Yeah, that's right.
Big silos.
They said he lost the whole damn business. He had a fire here, you know, 8-10 years ago, and burned down the main barn, and he rebuilt, or maybe longer than that, I don't know, but he rebuilt. But he said he lost the whole damn business. The irrigation he's put in there and everything, they said he lost the whole damn thing.
Well, I remember Stu Barless very well.
Yeah.
He was a little fellow.
Yep, that's right.
And he was board of directors with the Rock County Breeders.
Bob DeSalle, yeah.
I'm sure Bob DeSalle. And I remember driving out of the yard one night to go to a meeting in Janesville. Breeders. This was the breeders. And there was a possum on the road. And I got out of my car and put it right here and picked it up by the tail and threw it in my car. Then when I got to this meeting where here was Stu's car, pickup truck and covered truck, I guess. But anyway, I took the possum and put it under the seat of his car. And said nothing to anybody about it. And, well, I didn't hear anything from anybody. Next 2 or 3 days, I was worried. I thought maybe trouble or something. But that possum stayed under the seat of his car for about 4 days. And he looked at the seat one day and there was a possum.
Poor little thing.
Yeah.
I remember the day that Ron came up here and went back in the pasture and wandered around the pasture and somebody, I don't know who he had, had a new calf out there. He picks the calf up, throws the back seat and brings it back down to the farm down there. Bear wasn't very happy with him about that. Pretty freshly born new calf. then he buys a new Buick that's got these air bellows, you know, when they first come with these that had the air ride on them. He'd been running around the pasture one day somewhere and one of those bellows sprung a leak and he got back down to the office and let it sit there pretty quick. His car was up right down on the ground. You remember that? Old, great, big, gray Buick. It was a fairly new G. It was a nice riding car, you know. It had those bells on it. And then the other time, I never will forget, because it's right up by me now. Going north of Randolph out there is a big, you go down into a hollow, low area, and it's got black ground, mint, and onion and stuff. Oh, we were going to the Chamber of Commerce doing up north somewhere. And he took us along. There was four of us. There was somebody in front with him, you and I were back. We come over that hill, come down onto that flat, and all of a sudden he spotted those onions, and he pulled right up and stops, and out of the car, and his door wide open, out in the field, gets a handful of onions.
This meat?
Yeah, that's
you. You said, oh, onions.
Onions. Steak to high heaven, you know.
Were they wild onions or somebody's field of onions?
No, field onions. Field. They're still growing them up there.
No. Oh, so you just helped yourself to somebody's
sure,
onions?
He just went out and grabbed a handful and, oh, I suppose.
They're probably Kreschel.
I think they were small Kreschel's green onions or something.
One of the ones that have that.
Jack Kreschel, sure. Yeah. We're going up, the Chamber of Commerce used to have field day, and it'd be usually a 2-day deal. You'd go up one day, and they'd take you. I see me, it was up Marshfield or somewhere up there. I can't remember. Every time I go across Marsh, I never forget that. I never forget that. Every time I go across that marsh.
I think they've got onions up there this year.
Yeah, they got onions
on the left-hand side, though.
He could do the same thing.
That time
take him a little longer to go.
There wasn't that much traffic in those days, so it wasn't that bad, you know. Now he wouldn't want to do that there, because that stinking old road is so narrow. But the onions are exactly in the same place this year. They have onions and carrots and mint there all the time.
I haven't seen carrots.
Got irrigation in there now. They didn't used to have it. They got irrigation in there. Got a very productive old marsh. Well, I guess we better run along.
Oh gosh, haven't you got any more stories? You're doing great.
Well, I remember one time it snowed and
come along.
Okay, well, Evie's got one about when it snowed. Go on, Evie. Yeah.
And we were living in that house that you fixed up for us. And somebody came to the door, and they just fell in. It was after I-90. And I don't remember who it was. And we could hardly get the you had to help get the drivers, I think, out of they loaded up, I suppose. And then you had to help them get up the road so that they could make their deliveries. That was
Went off the road over on I-90.
But that, I can remember that was snow between.
I remember the afternoon when we had the storm and hit Louie's and Patty's fireplace, lightning.
Yeah, I remember that. I was there. I was there, and I called up the office.
When was that? They were living in the corner?
When they had their house on the corner.
Were you in the office when it hit the... Because somebody in the office says, well, your dad's busy. He can't come right now. Oh. And I said, but the house got hit by lightning. Well, I'm sorry. Your dad is busy.
Oh, I don't think
that was you?
I doubt it.
You're not going to claim it anyhow.
No.
Who would it have been? Helen Tapp? Was she there then, too?
Oh, yes. When you didn't feel good before you went to the hospital, and she was telling God, that was 67?
Yeah, 67.
And you started, and you said, I don't feel very good. And I said, well, do you think I should call a doctor or something? And I ended up taking you to the hospital. And we get to the hospital, and I said, well, I can probably go now. And, oh, no, don't leave me. So I didn't leave you. Well, then you said you felt like you were going to have a baby. It hurt so in your stomach. And then finally I went and called Vera, I guess. You had to lay on that table for quite a while before they finally decided they were going to operate or something, do something to you.
This was when you went into the hospital in 1967 and you stayed for 3 months.
Yeah, you were there quite a while. Was it that long?
Yep. Because I came twice from Kent. And that was when I started writing down these stories. Because I figured, you know, what if he doesn't pull through and then I will end up without any stories.
And you made me stop and get some raspberries one day to bring you up to the hospital. You said, I want some raspberries. And I said, are you supposed to have them? Oh, yes. That wouldn't hurt me. So I stopped and got you some raspberries and brought them up to the hospital to
me. I don't know if they did him any good.
No, I'm sure it wasn't
soup,
the thing.
One thing about it.
Well, you wouldn't eat the hospital food, and so you insisted on oyster stew every night.
Yeah.
Grandma would bring you a thermos of oyster stew every night, and you know what happened to you?
What?
After a little while, you got hives.
Uh-oh, from the oysters.
Huh? Yeah. I mean, he was having them so exclusively.
Oh.
Well, I was enjoying it myself there for a while. I mean,
after.
I was getting better. And,
you were getting meaner and meaner.
Well, I...
you were getting horrible.
I fooled Vera or somebody. Vera, of course. I kept reaching up and saying, seeing things.
You were hallucinating.
What?
You were hallucinating.
I was really. But she thought I was.
You were behaving mighty peculiarly, too.
Yeah.
Well, I had a dream. But,
well, we know about that dream.
The world was coming to an end.
You knew about that dream.
First, at 7 o'clock in the morning.
It wasn't coming to an end. There was going to be no more death and pain.
That's right.
At 7 o'clock in the morning, said the vision in your dream.
So I ended up by calling up everybody and telling them about this dream and how wonderful it was. And I called up the hospital staff and told them I wanted to tell the doctors that they couldn't look for another job.